morning.
Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to those who know that the world's political, religious, media, military, and economic institutions are the problem, and therefore repopulating the people who work within them can never be the solution. Our mission is to look behind the headlines to know who is perpetrating these crimes, so that over the course of the next 15 years, at least those we love can be spared the havoc that they will bring. In our second hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, because its covenant provides the only reliable answer. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. There were lots of musings this morning on the news as delivered from SRN, but here's a couple of just insights regarding the news. First, that White House through Carney is saying that, yeah, what the American people want is bigger, grower, faster, stronger. We just can't toy with this anymore. No more brinksmanship. Bigger, stronger, faster. By the way, the brinksmanship and the last time that the government actually was shut down was because the Obama administration would not compromise. They wouldn't even negotiate. And the brinksmanship on behalf of the Republicans was because they wanted to defund Obamacare, because the Affordable Care Act is in effect the most egregious taxation and control mechanism perpetrated on the American people in many decades. Absolute disastrous for our nation and economy. Now, as it relates to the Fed's announcement that it's going to continue quantitative easing, just slow it down perhaps a bit, but ready to jump back in with both feet at any time. And that being good news, it's all that says is that now with America having punted the football down the field for the next economic football down the field for the next 2 years, and spending as usual has resumed, that by the time the Obama administration is done wreaking havoc with this nation economically, we will be more than $20 trillion in debt federally, more than $5 trillion in debt at the state level and city level, and we will be more than $50 trillion in debt in terms of our unfunded mandates and pensions and Social Security, Medicare, for which there is no trust fund. Collectively, we will be over $75 trillion in debt. With an annual GDP of about $15 trillion, you can do the math, and when a nation reaches about 100 to 150% of debt to GDP, they are bankrupt. At that point, it's only smoke and mirrors, illusions, that prolongs life support. And the United States is five times worse than that. There will be a time when the United States can no longer service its debt, at which point the nation's economy will collapse. You know, when a business does not earn enough revenue to pay its bills and must bridge that gap by borrowing, the money borrowed becomes a liability of which they must pay interest. And they might be able to get by with it the first year and maybe the second year and sometimes even the third year. But after a while, when the revenues are insufficient to pay off the old debt, much less meet the financial demands of the business, particularly if they don't make huge cuts in their spending, the banks will say, you know, we're not going to loan you more money because you will never be able to pay it back. Well, that's the situation in America. Rather than cut government, we've expanded government, we've increased spending, and we've increased borrowing, and there's a realization we can never pay it back. And if you can't pay back the money, why would anybody in her right mind loan it to you? Which is why the Fed got involved in quantitative easing in the first place. But when the rest of the world wakes up and says, I'm not going to loan the United States money because there's no chance the United States will ever pay it back, and you can't service the debt, the nation will collapse. It will be vastly worse than what we've witnessed in Greece and Cyprus. The conditions now in Italy, Spain, and Portugal. There's this mention of the protests in Pakistan have made it such that even with $5 billion worth of military bribes each year, that we can't run caravans through Pakistan to support our ill-conceived military occupation of Afghanistan. And therefore, we're relying wholly on airlift. And what the United States does is it flies its aged fleet of C-5s from the east coast of the United States to Afghanistan at gargantuan cost. For what? What are we doing there? The Afghanis don't want us there. We've made a bad situation worse. The conditions for women are far worse. The bribery and malfeasance in government is worse than it was before. Why are we there? What did we gain? Terrorism is more rampant there now than it was before we invaded. All we did was temporarily push the Taliban, which was conceived in Pakistan, back into Pakistan to disrupt that country, which is why we can't run our caravans through them to support the troops in Afghanistan. And Pakistan is a nuclear nation. Well, that was suicidal. That was insane. So what are we going to do? Even the government of Afghanistan won't sign an ongoing agreement with the United States to keep troops there. They don't want us there. Why are we there? Why didn't we leave? Why did we invade? Moving on to the next item in the list, more feedback, blowback, where Americans are saying the NSA has gone too far. Yeah, the NSA has gone too far. So what are you going to do? You're going to give them a 10%, 20%, 30% haircut and say, you've got to go back, you've got to retreat 30% beyond where you have gone, and you're going to trust them? I mean, who in their right mind would trust the NSA to constrain what they already felt they had no reason to constrain? You know, a judge 2 days ago finally ruled, a case came before a federal judge regarding the unconstitutional nature of the NSA's ubiquitous spying. And the judge says it's absolutely, unequivocally unconstitutional. The NSA is violating the U.S. Constitution. Snowden was right. And now all the government wants to do is say, oh, maybe we need to cut it back a little bit and everything will be fine. And you'd trust them? On the subject of the NSA, I clipped an article. It was published by CNN. It is an editorial written by J. Kirk Wavy. That name may ring a bell for the more regular listeners to this program. I have to chuckle because if you're going to actually remember a name like that on this program, then you genuinely are a regular listener. J. Kirk Wavy is one of four men who was a very high person in the NSA who had been tasked with the job of actually constructing the mechanisms that the NSA is now using to break the U.S. Constitution and to control the American people and people really around the world. It's why the apparatus that was created, Mr. Wavy recognized, was way beyond the scope of what the NSA was chartered to do and that it was dangerous. And Mr. Wavy and three others did everything in their power within the chain of command of the NSA, going to their boss's boss, the top of the NSA, telling them that what we're doing here is catastrophically wrong. They then, when the NSA would not do anything about it and harass them over blowing the whistle, they took their case to United States politicians, to congressmen and senators, particularly those in the intelligence committees. They also blew them off. So they resigned from the NSA and took the information to the media, hoping that the journalists would do their job and protect Americans from the encroachment of their government robbing them of their freedoms. But the media essentially paid no attention to them. And then the government, because it did not like its secrets being its scheme, there's no secrets in this case, that its scheme to spy on everyone made public, it went after these men and began to harass them. Well, John Wiebe is, or J. Kirk Wiebe is one of those men. He wrote an editorial based upon the absurdity of the 60 Minutes interview with the NSA that I reported on Monday morning. For your just recollection, Kirk Wiebe is retired from the National Security Agency, where he worked for more than 32 years. He received the NSA's second highest award, the Meritorious Civilian Service Award. The director of the CIA's Meritorious Unit Award, and a letter of commendation from the Secretary of the Air Force, along with other awards. He was an NSA whistleblower on matters of privacy involving the massive electronic surveillance. CNN. Edward Snowden deserves amnesty and the ability to return to the United States without fear of being incarcerated for reporting crimes against people in high places in the U.S. government. So Mr. Wiebe's opening shot is a direct assault against the general who runs the CIA, who said, no, we ought not give Snowden amnesty because he likened him to a kidnapper who had killed 10 hostages, and that by releasing 40 hostages, that thereby granting him asylum was morally repugnant to this man. Well, according to Kirk Wiebe and anybody with a whit of sense, the criminals in this case is not Snowden. The criminal in this case is those who manage the NSA, and that's how he begins. He then says Monday's ruling by U.S. District Judge Richard J. Leon that the NSA's widespread collection of millions of Americans' telephone records was unconstitutional bolsters this view. Indeed, those who swore an oath to the Constitution, who violated the Constitution, who are doing something that is unconstitutional and therefore illegal in America, are those that are empowered, those working within the U.S. government and the NSA. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Continuing this editorial for CNN, we find that the text continues with, indeed, some say that Snowden is a traitor. But just as a member of the U.S. military is not required, in fact, can be held accountable, from following an unlawful order, it is proper for an employee of the United States intelligence community, the NSA, CIA, DIA, and others, should for them to report information that concerns lawbreaking by the intelligence agencies or their employees. What Snowden did, he was morally bound to do. Had he not done it, he would have been a traitor. The NSA's official suggestion that amnesty for Snowden could possibly be put on the table was undoubtedly welcome news for Snowden, yet NSA Director General Keith Alexander rejected this suggestion. Yes, he's the one that rejected it by associating Snowden with kidnap and murder, when in fact the country that invades other countries and murders more people than any other is the United States. How can anyone believe that Snowden would not be deserving of amnesty? Clearly, it was the government and its senior officials who committed the crime. People who took an oath to defend the Constitution from enemies both foreign and domestic, and who failed to take to heart the words they swore to uphold. Indeed, Snowden did not, nor does any government employee, swear an allegiance to the President of the United States, or even to the Secretary of Defense, or to the Director of the NSA. No, they all swore an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution, and they all violated the Constitution. They all threw the Constitution away. Unfortunately, while federal law protects whistleblowers who work in other government sectors from reprisals, of course, and it protects all private employees who are whistleblowers from reprisals for truth-telling, and they have passed for reporting wrongdoing and mismanagement. Those who work in intelligence are expressly denied such rights. Yeah, I've read the law. It's amazing how the government, being completely hypocritical, carves a niche out for itself to say, no, we're going to support whistleblowers every place except where they can embarrass us. And there, if they blow the whistle, they're criminals. When NSA employees, Bill Binney, Tom Drake, Diane Rourke, and I, those are the four, submitted a formal complaint about mismanagement at the agency, the government's response on July 26, 2007 was to send the FBI to raid our homes, searching them for 7 hours and seizing our computers, our phones, and other digital media. We are just now getting our property back 6 years later, after having successfully sued the government in December 2012. The government is become a police state. Here the FBI was used to harass, to invade the privacy of individuals who were doing the right thing. That's why if we're going to save any or have any hope for the longevity of this country, we need to completely eliminate the FBI, the ATF, the CIA, the NSA, and yes, indeed, the DOD. The government even indicted Tom Drake, although it dropped its criminal charges against him. Still, for the five of us, it was the equivalent of a punch in the face and a warning to other would-be truth-tellers not to report wrongful government activities or the government will come after you. Snowden clearly saw what the government does to whistleblowers who try to work within the government to fix things that are wrong. He knew that our complaint to the United States Department of Defense Inspector General in September of 2002 was for naught. Although the report agreed that our complaint was well-founded, nothing happened except we were harassed. No one was found guilty of wrongful behavior or waste of hundreds of billions of taxpayer dollars. In other words, there was no reason whatsoever for Snowden to try to resolve these issues within the NSA because the NSA is completely out of control, has no interest in holding anyone accountable. Even before writing the complaint, we, all longtime and senior NSA employees, along with Diane Rourke, a senior staffer at the House Permanent Select Subcommittee on Intelligence, had approached Congress in 2001 about the matter of illegal collection of data about U.S. citizens. That was 2001, no action. Snowden might have known that we were ultimately punished by approaching officials. And even had our security clearances, he wrote, revoked when the FBI raided our homes, despite the fact that four of the five of us were not indicted and none of us were found guilty of committing any crime. This is how your government responds. These were good people. These were people doing the right thing. And the government sent its attack dogs after them. Welcome to our new world. The editorial written by Mr. Wiebe, after serving some 30 years in the NSA, goes on to read, for employees in the business of intelligence, there are no honest brokers. Nobody honest in the intelligence community. There are no viable paths to follow to report subverting the U.S. Constitution. That's the reason that Snowden first went to Hong Kong and ultimately to Moscow to seek refuge. He did not go to these places to give away national secrets. Rather, he needed a place to stay that was safe from extradition, where he could wait while the United States sorted through the facts, especially those regarding government leaders who violated the most basic of our nation's laws, the right to privacy. You know, he released only a handful of documents initially. And the documents that he released proved that the United States government was violating its own constitution knowingly, deliberately, purposefully, and had set up this elaborate apparatus to hide the fact and to give legitimacy to its doing something that was morally repugnant and unconstitutional. And how did the government respond? Rather than saying, oh boy, you caught us. We lied to Congress. We've lied to the American people. We are absolutely guilty here. There is no justification for this. We went too far. Let's rein it in. No. Everything has been to attack Snowden personally, to attack the messenger as opposed to the message he's bringing to us. It was shocking to see the interview on MSNBC a few years ago with the former director of the NSA, Michael Hayden, and to hear him redefine the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. When asked whether the NSA had violated the Fourth Amendment, Hayden said that it had not. Hayden said that probable cause was not the Fourth Amendment standard for violating a citizen's privacy. It was based upon reasonable suspicion. So do we have, as a government, reasonable suspicion that everyone who uses a cell phone, that everyone who accesses the Internet is guilty of trying to subvert the government? And by the way, when is subverting the government? If your goal is to expose and condemn the malfeasance of government, to expose their criminal behavior, their moral repugnance, if that's your goal, how is that even wrong? Isn't that the most moral and rational and reasonable, righteous thing to do? But if it's reasonable suspicion that enables the government to breach a citizen's privacy, are they suspect that every American now recognizes that they're corrupt? And is the purpose of the surveillance to protect the government from its people? Is the enemy now the American people? And for Snowden to have been a traitor, then the enemy has to be the American people themselves. In recent days, Hayden defended the actions of both the Bush and Obama administration, saying that the NSA collection program was blessed, his words, by all three branches of the U.S. government. Yes. The fact is that all three branches of the U.S. government are equally corrupt. That's correct. They're equally corrupt. The White House, Congress, and the judiciary. The judiciary in America is now gamed. It's actually using information that is unconstitutionally seized to prosecute people. And the Congress is just a more diverse version of these past administrations that whose every word and deed have been hostile to the best interests of the American people. What Hayden has not said was that neither the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court nor Congress had a good understanding of what was going on. Mind you, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court is simply smoke and mirrors. It's like what the Fed does with quantitative easing. It's a court in name only. It was created for the express purpose of sprinkling political holy water on malfeasance and hiding the malfeasance from the rest of us. There is no court in the sense of opposing arguments and appeals and rational discussion. This is not about a judge trying to determine whether or not someone is operating within the framework of the U.S. Constitution and being judicious. Simply a rubber stamp to create the illusion of authenticity. That's why the Patriot Act, which deprives Americans of their powers, which created this court, is called the Patriot Act. It's all centrifuge. In recent days, then, we recognize that Congress was deliberately lied to by the NSA. Not that it would have mattered, even when they heard the truth, even when Snowden provided them with the truth, they continued to support the lie. So even if they hadn't been deceived by the NSA, it wouldn't have mattered. When they were told the truth, they still sided with the liars. The NSA contends that it provided Congress with the opportunity to be briefed on their surveillance, but some members of Congress dispute that. I was sent an article by a friend the other day that suggests that even though the judge has recently said that the NSA's confiscation of information in violation of our privacy is unconstitutional, that it won't matter because just like J. Edgar Hoover had files on every politician, which kept every politician from trying to rein in his power, it was blackmail. The same thing is true with the NSA. They have ways to discredit everyone in a position of power who speaks out against them. And so there is no chance that anyone in power is going to constrain this evil monster. Some members of Congress will dispute that. Snowden's revelations since June have certainly made it clear that no one except the NSA believes that they had the whole truth about the extensiveness of the data collection efforts, whether from the internet or from the phone system. And yet, going back now a dozen years ago, Wiebe and others, the author of this article, briefed Congress about the extensiveness of this problem. Congress knew. They chose to go along. Perhaps more germane to this discussion, whether Snowden should receive amnesty and the matter of who committed the real crime, Snowden or the government, is that the legal basis for NSA in defending its actions can be found in a singular court order called Smith v. Maryland, 1979. Which went to the Supreme Court at a time when there was hardly an internet and nobody even dreamed there would be cell phones, social network sites, or Twitter. In this case, touted by the government as legitimizing the bulk creation of metadata. By the way, go back to 1979. I was out of school by 2 years at that time. There really were no personal computers. I mean, the idea of a computer having personal or business use was just beginning. The only internet was used between to convey highly technical information through highly technical users with the U.S. military and between a number of universities. It wasn't a way that people communicated. The first cell phones did not emerge for almost a decade afterward. So to cite that as the basis for confiscating cell phone records and internet activity before either even it were invented is, of course, insane. In this case, touted by the government as legitimizing the bulk collection of megadata under Section 215 of the Patriot Act, which was one of the worst, most debilitating, unstabilizing, destructive bits of legislation ever passed in America, the police inserted a recording device at a telephone company to record the metadata. Phone number originating the call, the time of the call, the number called, the duration of the conversation, associated with a man suspected of robbing a lady. The alleged thief challenged the constitutionality of the recording of the megadata associated with the phone call, but the Supreme Court backed the lower court decision, doing so under the circumstances that was constitutional. This was a case where there was a thief who robbed a person, and they were using phone number information, not cell phone, but just phone number, checking their phone records to see if, in fact, they could increase the circumstantial evidence against the thief. So someone accused of thievery and now just going into the normal telephone records. Now, one might ask, how does the Supreme Court's approval of the collection of metadata associated with a single phone call, which was used, for, by the way, for billing purposes for the telephone company, made by a suspected thief, end up authorizing the bulk collection of phone metadata by hundreds of millions of American citizens by the most powerful spy agency in the world? We all know that the field of law has its quirks, but it's clear that such an interpretation of law does not constitute justice, let alone make any sense. So with these facts as background, I think most Americans would agree that Edward Snowden not only deserves amnesty, if I may editorialize here, he deserves our praise. Parades, schools ought to be named in his honors. In fact, it is those who allow these programs to be implemented and developed over the past 12 years who should be prosecuted. Boy, do I agree with that. After all, do we not stand for equal justice for all? That was Wiebe's editorial. Speaking of malfeasance in the U.S. government, you may have heard the stories of the of a man that has been imprisoned somewhere in Iran, although his whereabouts are unknown. An American ex-FBI agent, believed to have been held in Iran for the past 7 years, was working for the CIA on an unapproved mission, the Associated Press News Agency reports. And there's been a whole story about how he was working for the CIA, but an unapproved mission. Well, the CIA, of course, denied that he was working for them. The CIA said, no, 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 he was just out there trying to do private business. We have no association with him. And then someone in the CIA said, no, 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 that's not true. He was one of ours, and we have abandoned him. And the reason this came to light is here the United States formed an agreement with Iran, which gave Iran access to $7 billion and the ability to sell its petrochemicals, but we didn't even bother to require them to release a man that was on a mission sanctioned by the CIA. As we look at the story of Robert Levinson, we see why we ought not have a CIA. The CIA sent him on a mission that it's embarrassed about. And so the CIA doesn't even want to disclose what the mission was. Now, as it relates to Iran, the CIA has a long history of doing heinous things. The CIA toppled the popularly elected government of Iran and replaced the individual that the people of Iran chose with the Shah. And then when the Shah didn't want to play along with the CIA anymore, we toppled him and brought in the Ayatollah. The history of the CIA and Iran is repulsive. And so the CIA, never learning anything because it's never accountable, never responsible, sent this man on a mission. And rather than saying, yeah, it was an approved mission, no, they are doing the same thing the Bush administration did relative to Abu Ghraib when the pictures came out to show that we were torturing Muslim citizens. It sacrificed the freedom and reputation of underlings who were simply following orders. In this case, now the CIA is saying, oh, it was an unimproved act. Yeah, but except a dozen or so men who approved it in the CIA have either lost their jobs or been demoted. It's just that those above them don't want any responsibility. No one wants to divulge how heinous the mission actually was. When his family said, hey, listen, he was CIA, you know he was CIA, you sent them there, and now you won't do anything to get him back, the CIA paid the family $2.5 million to be quiet. And it was by doing this that the CIA was finally forced to admit, yeah, he really was CIA. And we abandoned him. So you believe the CIA when they were lying and saying, no, he didn't work for us, we have no responsibility for him? Or do you believe him when they say he was an unauthorized, unapproved mission? Would you have any reason to ever believe them? Are they ever accountable? What does their prior behavior suggest? It's an extraordinarily sad story. It's one of the reasons why the United States would be vastly better off without the CIA. Reuters is reporting that that French forces are now active in the Central African Republic. Yes, their invasion of Mali turned bad, just as I told you it would. Oh, yes, there was so much euphoria in the early days. Shock and awe. They were reclaiming the territory and freeing Mali from those horrible terrorists that America had unleashed by arming the jihadist who overthrew Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. And I said, it's just a matter of time. They'll fade into the woodwork, and then they will attack in swarms like mosquitoes, and it will be a killing field for the French, and they'll find that there is no way out. it to be like the United States invasion of Afghanistan. And indeed, that's what has happened in Mali. And it has expanded now from Mali to the Central African Republic. There's a little difference in Mali, though, in the Central African Republic. In Mali, the Arab Muslims, like in the Sudan and the Darfur region, began to attack and brutalize African Muslims as if they were racially inferior. In the Central African Republic, where France is now trying to intervene, the issue now is that the Muslim militias, now equipped with the weapons that were provided to Libya by Qatar and the United States to kill Muammar Gaddafi, well, those weapons have enabled the Muslims to terrorize whole towns and take control of them. So Christians have not only fled to their towns, but now they have congregated in places and formed militias to fight back. And so now in the Central African Republic, rather than it being simply Islamic terror perpetrated on Christians, the Christians are now responding. And so it can be reported as Christian militia and boys armed with machetes creating chaos against the Muslims, but it's only because they want to return home. They want to be able to resist those who have robbed them, who have terrorized them, who have burnt their homes to the ground. We will continue with this story when Shattering Myths continues in the news section on another day. We'll be back in a moment.